Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Gina R. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, September 5th, 2018. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are at page 105. The first paragraph, which starts, Our Loyalty and the Desire, reading through four paragraphs ending, Melted Like Snow in June. We will comment on all four paragraphs. Today's readers are The 12 Steps, Carolyn D., 12 Traditions, Nancy T. Our readers will be Carrie S., Pia S., Robin P., and our newcomer greeter is Melanie C. Reference numbers for Tuesday, September 4th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,872, and Wednesday, September 5th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,878. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Carolyn D. to read the 12 steps. Carolyn, please press star one.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Carolyn D., grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater from Rochester, New York. Thank you for allowing me to read the 12 steps. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you so much, Carolyn D. I will now ask Nancy T. to read the traditions.
Thank you, Gina. Good morning, everybody. Nancy T., recovered compulsive overeater in Lewiston, Idaho. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to be of service without a pass.
Thank you so much, Nancy T. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 105, first paragraph, beginning our loyalty and the desire, reading through 4 paragraphs, ending with melted like snow in June. We will comment on all 4 paragraphs. I will ask Carrie S. to begin reading.
Good morning, Gina. Thank you for your continued loyalty and service. This is Carrie S., recovered in Golden, Colorado. 2 wives, page 104. Our loyalty and the desire that our husbands hold up their heads and be like other men have begotten all sorts of predicaments. We have been unselfish and self-sacrificing. We have told innumerable lies to protect our pride and our husbands' reputations. We have prayed. We have begged. We have been patient. We have struck out viciously. We have run away. We have been hysterical. We have been terror-stricken. We have sought sympathy. We have retaliatory love affairs with other men. Our homes have been battlegrounds, many an evening. In the morning, we have kissed and made up. Our friends have counseled chucking the men, and we have done so with finality, only to be back in a little while, hoping, always hoping. Our men have sworn great solemn oaths that they were through drinking forever. We have believed them when no one else could or would. Then in days, weeks, or months, a fresh outburst. We seldom had friends at our homes, never knowing how or when the men of our house would appear. We could make few social engagements. We came to live almost alone. When we were invited out, our husbands sneaked so many drinks that they spoiled the occasion. If, on the other hand, they took nothing, their self-pity made them kill joys. There was never financial security. Positions were always in jeopardy or gone. An armored car could not have brought the pay envelopes home. The checking account melted like snow in June. Just starting my timer. Carrie, living in the sunlight of the Spirit, thank you, God, for my abstinence today. This reading, to me, is a gift because I haven't studied this section. The energy that jumps off the page to me is this just tumultuous uncertainty in the home. There's this energy that addicts bring with them, and that's that was neat. Always so many variables to how's Carrie coming across today. You know, so my family would constantly be apprehensive, walking on eggshells, never knowing whether I was going to, be elated over the top on one end of the spectrum, or, completely wanting to hide, run away, be in my room, maudlin sympathy, and me always pointing the finger at everybody else. When we were invited out, our husband sneaked so many drinks, they spoiled the occasion. That principle of dishonesty was, for me, the biggie, always being sneaky, never being able to be honest. The word predicaments, I looked up some synonyms, just the crisis, for always a dilemma, always hardships. There's always an emergency. And so really just drama. That first paragraph really sounds a lot like it parallels the bedevilments on page 52 of how I'm not able to show up in life. And then also the other thing that jumped out to me was, and there is a solution. It talks about how our illness engulfs all those whose lives it touches. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentments, financial insecurities, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. And so my disease did and has touched all those people, but thank God for finding a solution through a vision for you and beginning to honor what jumps off for me of these pages. Thank God for those that came before me that were willing to share the beauty and the gift of recovery. And if you're new in this program, all I suggest is just setting aside everything you think you know about yourself and this book especially, and let it come alive for you. And so with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much for getting us kicked off with this, Carrie. I will now open the lines for additional shares. Who would like to share on what was read today?
Pia S. in Florida.
Gotcha.
Julie E.B.
Julie E.B.
Kathleen O.
Kathleen O. We've got room for more folks. Press star one if you'd like to share.
I was unmuting, so I don't know if you could take one more share.
I just heard two people. Just tell me your name.
Rachel M.
Rachel Peggy M. And then Peggy M. All right, let's stop there. So I've got Pia, Julie, Kathleen, Rachel, and Peggy. Pia, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dina. Thank you for your service. This is Pia S., recovered compulsive overeater in Parkland, Florida. And I've read this chapter before, but I didn't really understand it. And now that I'm recovered, I see, I get more about what this, what Bill W. talks about here. And it talks about how my disease and how my eating was affecting my husband in particular. And it gives me his perspective. And I thought, I didn't thought that my binging alone at home when he was at work affected him. This disease do affect the people around us. It was affecting him when I was dieting and when I had a lot of anxiety, and he had to drive me everywhere because I couldn't, get out of the house. When I was, picking fights with him, not being clear about my motives, operating on this hidden agenda. I didn't want to go to parties because I was overweight, and I hated how I looked. Also, when I, I couldn't make like basic phone calls to like insurance companies because I was in so much fear, and I was like a baby. I was a child. I'm growing up in this program. I'm becoming the person that I'm supposed to be. I'm becoming a woman. I'm not a little girl anymore. And it's because I have worked this program. I'm working this program every day. And now I have a fellowship and I have a higher power that I can rely on in all aspects of my life. And as long as I talk and I pray and I seek God in everything, I get to live a life where I can be, you know, of service to my husband. I can be there for him instead of he taking care of me constantly. But it is up to me to do the work. This is the program of action, so it's totally up to me. That is where I use my willpower. It's in the action that I take, and I will leave the results up to God. So thanks for letting me share, Gina.
Oh, thank you so much, Pia S. All right, we've got Julie E.B. next, followed by Kathleen O. Julie, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Yeah, this is very powerful for me because I can really identify in. I was living deep in this, and on days where I do not stay connected to my higher power, I can go back to this. Not seeing really what I'm doing to my loved ones in my life, how much loyalty I'm demanding from them as I go up and down and in and out, and not seeing the position I put them in. You know, my spouse used to go and get me food when I wasn't, quote, feeling well, because I was so sick. I was bedbound for months in pain, and struggling with my weight, and you know, 300 pounds, and I could barely move. And so my husband would go to the store and get my food, and even knowing he knew, you know, it couldn't be healthy or good amounts. He was loyal, and my home was a battleground. And emotionally, a lot of these things identify my emotional world. And yet the loved ones in my life were always hoping today I would come home from work, come home from life, and it would be better today. But I might go a while and then have a fresh outburst of emotion where I was trying to control and run the show for other people in my life. And I would come home, okay, we're all cleaning. I would come home, we were all, okay, we're all going to the park or we're all doing this. And my kids never knew what to find. And they would be asking me, are you okay, Mom? Are you okay? They could tell when I was disturbed. And so quieting that through working the steps. This is 10, 11, and 12 work to me. And I do want to send that word out for those who are still suffering in the food, who are on step zero or step one, or working the steps along the way. You know, I got some feedback yesterday from folks hearing this going, oh, no, I'm like this. What do I do? Well, don't start with step 10, 11, and 12. Just stay in your work. Stay in your abstinence. Get freedom from the food. Stay in 4, 5, and 6. Get honest with God. Stay in 7, 8, and 9. Get honest with each other. And then direct your attention to this. All this tells you, if you're new, is if you see yourself in these, then that's that unmanageability in step one. That it's time. Not just a food program or a food problem. It's a life program and a life solution. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Okay, we've got Kathleen O. up next, followed by Rachel M. Kathleen, please go ahead.
Good morning, Gina. Thank you so much for moderating this morning, and good morning, everyone on the line. My name is Kathleen O., recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. When we were invited out, our husbands sneaked so many drinks that they spoiled the occasion. If, on the other hand, they took nothing, their self-pity made them killjoys. And a killjoy is a person who deliberately spoils the enjoyment of others through resentful or overly sober behavior. So we're a real party pooper. And, you know, when I was in the food, I'd be in a food fog. I was never present when I was out on occasions with my husband. And if I was white-knuckling a diet, I wasn't a happy camper. So, you know, this chapter is about what it's like living with an addict, and I've been on both sides. I live with an alcoholic, and I'm also, you know, a compulsive overeater, so we both have our addictions. But this is about taking my inventory and not my husband's. And, you know, so self-pity, woe is me. I was always looking for what was wrong, and I always thought the food was the problem, and I always thought people were the problem, you know, if only. And so, you know, putting down the food wasn't enough. Entire abstinence didn't stop the crazy in the head. I had to do more. And, you know, a good indication that I'm being selfish and self-centered is by looking at my relationships, especially my relationship with my husband. I had to quit wishing, if only, you know, I had to quit wishing that he was going to change. I needed to change. I needed to be understanding rather than be understood, be comforting rather than be comforted, and love rather than be loved. And when in addiction, it was all about my wanting love, comfort, and understanding. Why couldn't my husband love me more? Why couldn't he understand my problems? Why? So when I started, you know, working these steps, and when I started practicing love and kindness, tolerance, patience, my relationship with my husband changed. And it isn't perfect. And maybe there are too many decades of bad history with both our addictions, but our relationship is quiet and calm, and we have a mutual respect today. You know, I have to look at how I can be helpful, how I can be a service not only to those I love, but to everyone that I come in contact with throughout the day. And the steps keep me in freedom today, you know, freedom from the food and freedom from no longer fighting anyone or anything, but it is daily work. But it's work that really feels good at the end of the day. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Kathleen O. Okay, we've got Rachel M. up next, followed by Peggy M. Rachel, please go ahead. Rachel, press star 1 to unmute.
Sorry, okay, I was talking and I wasn't unmuted. Thank
there
you
we
for
go.
Giving me the prompt. This is Rachel. I'm from New Mexico, and I've been listening to this meeting for probably about 9 months. Someone told me about it, and I love it. I'm a total Big Book thumper. I got into Overeaters Anonymous when I was in my early 20s, and then I got into a different food program later when I was in my 40s. And so one of the things I was thinking about while people were talking is I was thinking about this food fog that I would be in and this food drunk where I would binge and then pass out on the couch. And I remember one time when I was going to school, my kids were 1 and 3. They're now, you know, like their late 20s. But I was driving home. I had gone to school, gone to the university, going back to get my degree, and I had stopped and done the grocery shopping, and then I was going to drive back for about 45 minutes. To the town that I lived in, which is a small town outside of a big town. And I was trying to open up a bicycle, you know, because I went shopping, and that's kind of how I dealt with the boredom and the tedium of the drive. It's just the frustration of the long day and studying and just everything, you know. The wheel kept pulling to the left, and then I tried to straighten it out and tear the thing. Anyway, before I knew it, behind me there was a siren. And the police officer pulled me over, and I said, you know, officer, I was trying to eat this bicycle, and I think my wheels are out of alignment, so blah, blah, blah. And I remember the look on his face. What I imagined he was going to do was go home and tell his wife, and that he thought it was, like, just kind of different, possibly funny. And he said, oh, I thought I had another drunk for the drunk tank. I have 2 in the car. And I remember thinking to myself, food is not illegal. I can be totally drunk and have erratic behavior while I'm binging, putting my life in danger, putting other people's lives in danger, and it's not the same, it's not treated the same at all. And I just remember being just frightened by my behavior, but I knew I couldn't stop. And I still was of the belief that I could control it, and I've heard anything you're out of control with, you can't control it. I still thought I could control it and measure it. And, you know, so my top weight was 172, and now I hover in the like 120. And for much of the time, I was about 142 because I tried exercise bulimia, I tried starving, and, you know, I mean, just such hard work with the food. And, you know, I can only imagine what it was like to be around me when I was all consumed with trying to fight this war that I could not win. And that marriage did end up in divorce, and it became one of the best things for me because the big book talks about how all our scorecards are at zero. So, you know, I don't imagine that, you know, I was a lovely person to be around while I was fighting the disease and eating. And I can remember going out and thinking, okay, I'll try to take a protein the size of my, you know, palm of my hand. And inevitably I'd get into this crazy thinking of, thank you, I'll pass.
Oh, thank you, Rachel M. Appreciate your share. All right, we've got Peggy M. up next. But before I go to her, I just want to let everybody know we're on page 105, first paragraph, Our Loyalty and the Desire. We're reading through four paragraphs ending with Melted Like Snow in June. We're commenting on all four paragraphs. As soon as Peggy is done with her share, I'll take some more names. So please get ready. Okay, Peggy, go ahead.
Thank you, Gina. Thanks for your service this morning. I read this chapter to the wives, and I applied it. I could apply it to my own life because I have been a child of an alcoholic. I have been a wife of two alcoholics. I have watched my son's in addiction, and so I realized that this is a family disease. And it was with the alcohol, and it also is with the food. And today, my solutions are working this program of OA through the Big Book, and I'm so grateful for all the help that you've given me and all the help that I get through the vision meetings and through the Big Book. So these four paragraphs are showing me how sick I really, truly am. And the Big Book tells us in so many different spots, we are really ill. And this disease, this spiritual malady, can only be helped by my higher power, the steps in this fellowship. And there may be other ways for some people, and that's okay. But for me, it's working through the fellowship of the program. I can remember how my disease would have me so off balance and so isolated. I was feeling so unable to live anymore. Basically, I got to the bottom. I had gained over 150 pounds overweight. I was at my bottom with this disease of compulsive overeating. And I have now, in 1 year's time, lost 91 pounds. I'm very grateful for that, and maybe even more. I'll find that out when I weigh in again. But it's only through this program and all of you that I've got this help. But I was not able to do stairs or take a bath, but today I could do that. Today I can be active and alive and live life. I can go to the zoo, which last time I went to the zoo, we walked 5 miles. I can take the stairs instead of the elevator going to a doctor, and I can share this message of recovery with others, and I am able to do that. Just at my doctor's office, I was able, as we were walking the stairs together and sharing, I shared the weight loss, and I wouldn't have been able to do that 1 year ago. I would not have been able to walk them stairs. I would have had gone home and missed my doctor's appointment. And so I am so grateful to all of you for being here for me, and thank you, and I will pass. Have a good day. Thanks, Gina.
Gina, do you want to press star one, please?
Otherwise, we can take.
Thank you, Melanie.
Okay.
You know, I've got. Okay. Here we go. Thank you, Peggy. All right, ready for some more names, please.
Nancy L.
Nancy L.
Greg B.
Rachel
Greg
S.
B.
Leah T. D.
Rachel S. Leah T. D.
Rebecca T.
Tracy B.
All right, let me not tell you who I've got. I might have missed somebody. Nancy L., Greg B., Rachel S., Liat TD, Rebecca T., Tracy B. Let's go with that, and we'll see if we have time for a couple more. So, Nancy L., please go ahead.
Thank you, moderator. This is Nancy L. in Arizona. Recovered, thank God. On two sentences, we have believed them when no one else could, then in days, weeks, or months, a fresh outburst. And that brings back a lot of memories to me when the kids were little. I would manage somehow to put in a couple weeks together. And then, you know, a day or two later, you know, I was counting 21 days, trying to make it clean with 21 days. And day 22, I'd be binging my head off. And who is this woman? You know, my kids are going, who is this mom? Husbands, who is this wife of mine? And then no sooner did they start to fall into all that fear again that mom was going to be a monster, and then maybe I would get another week together. So it was just a merry-go-round. Is she up? Is she down? Is she in the middle? And that was no way to treat my family. I didn't really know, you know, exactly how much damage I was doing, but anyway, very, very grateful. I found a way out. I thank you, God, for today. I am abstinent, and with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Nancy L. All right, Greg B., you're up next, followed by Rachel S. Greg, please go ahead.
Good morning, Gina. Can you hear me okay?
Just fine.
Okay, good, good. Yes, yeah, sorry, on a headset thingy. I'm Greg B., recovered alcoholic, compulsive eater, food addict in California. Man, you know, this actually sounds like my life now, unfortunately, with the which really tells you that it has nothing to do with alcohol or food. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's about us, our nature, our behavior, you know, the way we treat other people. And the reason I say it's my life now, I'm unemployed and I've got financial difficulties. And so, you know, you could take the word food out of there. Take the word alcohol out of there, or whatever your substance of choice is, and I still got the behaviors. I don't want to go places because I'm looking for a job. Oh, he's looking for a job, and you know I don't want to be a killjoy. Well, I just got back from Disneyland. Well, did you guys take a vacation? No, we haven't. You know all that stuff. Because the thing is, if I don't change from the inside out, if I don't bring my program with me everywhere, 24/7, in any situation, if I am not taking care of my responsibilities instead of expecting the world, the wife, the others, to take care of my responsibilities, you know, it's not going to matter whether I'm absent or not. It's not going to matter whether I lost a whole bunch of weight or not. You know, it depends on what I'm going to do today. So the thing is, it's a lifelong journey. There's stuff to do no matter what level of weight loss, no matter what level of program you have. You can't rest on your laurels. You can't bank up recovery. And then all of a sudden, you know, I got 50 more chips of recovery, 50 more days, 50 more years, and I can be this way. I can, you know, coast today. No, no. I got work to do today. I can't whine and complain about my lot in life. There's stuff I got to do. But, the great but is, and a wonderful but, we have this program. We have each other. We have a power greater than ourselves. I don't have to take control of the job market. I don't have to take control of my family situation. I can relax. I can take it easy. I have to do action. Got to row that boat, as my friend says. But, you know, we have each other. And when I come to a meeting, when I work the program, when I work with another person, or have an outreach call, do something working towards recovery instead of working towards self-pity, my life gets better, infinitely better. Many times, you know, my brain would say, well, go on a job hunt, go to this job seminar, whatever. But I go to a meeting instead, every single time my life improves because I'm focused on what's important, recovery and helping other people. If I help other people, I get jobs. If I help other people, I get contracts. It's amazing how that happens. So I want to keep working. I'm going to keep working this program. I'm going to keep helping people when I can. And love you all. Greg D. in California. My number is 650-823-0960. Thanks, Tess.
And thank you, Greg. All right, Rachel S., you're up next. You'll be followed by Liat TD. Rachel, please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. This is Rachel F. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Great. I am a recovering compulsive eater in Colorado. This is my first time sharing on the line. I'm very grateful for everyone's service here today and all the days that I've listened. This is a really great place for me to spend my mornings with you guys. I just wanted to talk on this. I'm fairly new to the program, so I haven't finished working through the steps. But it is interesting for me to think back when I first walked into the rooms and I thought, I heard about this kind of how you've maybe impacted other people with your eating, and that just seemed like kind of a ridiculous idea to me because I couldn't see that at all, how my eating could possibly affect anyone else. But you know, there's a lot of delusion and illusion that starts at the beginning and that we have built this kind of imaginary life that we think exists that we just don't see the truth. And so as I've gotten sober and started to see the truth more and more, I can see how I've impacted other people. And I can also see how it can be different. So it's really been wonderful. You know, I can look in the past and see that when I go to Kansas City to visit my family, my first concern is, I'm going to go to these different restaurants that I love. Now when I think about going to Kansas City with my family, I can think, I'm going to spend time with my niece and my sister, and we can go do these things together, and it's not that the food is the first thing on my mind. Also, probably the person who's been impacted the most by my eating is my husband, who I kind of have just thrown him around like, oh, now I'm a vegan, now I'm on a paleo diet, and just since I do all the cooking, he just kind of has to follow that, whatever my whim was to try to get skinny at that moment. And then it became things like wanting him to go out and buy my food in the middle of the night because I was too lazy. Like, it would be like, you know, 11 p.m. and raining, and I'd be like, can you go buy me something? And sometimes he would do that, and I don't do that anymore. That is not something that I'm willing to do, and to just drag him through all my ups and downs and all over the place. And today I get to work on, you know, loving and appreciating him just as he is, not being resentful for, you know, or blaming him for some of my food problems, which I would do in the past. I get to just love and enjoy him and learn to love and enjoy myself. And it's just been a wonderful thing. So anyway, just thank you all, and I think I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Rebecca, or Rachel S. Liat TD, you're next, followed by Rebecca T. Please go ahead, Liat.
Good morning, Gina. Thank you for all the work that you do for us. I was reading this morning, and I was thinking, although this was written to the wife of the alcoholic who suffers so much, you know, in the early days, I can relate to it because, you know, it is, so I've been in the same in marriage for 22 years, and man, my house has become a battleground for sure. And over 18 years ago, I was given a gift of abstinence. You know, the food was removed from me. The same happened to my husband over 34 years ago. You know, alcohol was taken away from him. And I always say, you know, because my dream was to be thin one day. Oh, if I could just be the normal body size. And if not only that, if this disease, if I would stop obsessing about food and going back on the diet and off the diet, worrying about my body and how I looked. That was taken like overnight for me, you know, and I know today that it was taken so I can deal. The first thing that I thought was my problem was taken so I can see what my real problem is, which is me, you know, and I was looking at it. Wow. you know, we prayed, we begged, we been patient, we struck out viciously, we ran away. All the things that Liat, myself, my ideas, I want to do this, now I'm going to do this. And it's like was said before, it's like moment by moment, I'm switching, you know, oh, I need to be patient, I need to be loving. No, he's not fair. I'm going to talk about, I talk about it with my parents and put him down and they start worrying about my marriage and want me to divorce. And I'm just building up stories like over a second just by emotions, and then my emotions just go up and down in waves. You can't trust them. And it's all based on self, you know, and all based on self, me, mine, how it affects me and not seeing. And so for many years, you know, meditation and some form of inventory kept me clean from the food, but the crazy didn't go away. And only 5 years ago, I've been freed by when I realized that I need to get rid of self, you know, and I need to live by spiritual principles. And the other day, I was reading from this book, and it said that grace is always available, always, at all times, 24/7. But also, self is available 24/7. And it's up to me, either I'm going to lean on grace or am I going to lean on self? And it's a daily choice. It's no longer what am I going to do. It's, are you going to lean on grace, Liat, or are you going to lean on self? And leaning on grace make me that woman. And this marriage, the marriage that God wants, and not that I plan on how it's going to be, and what, and it's beautiful. And I'll pass. Thank you. I love you all.
Thank you, Liat TD. Okay, Rebecca T, you are next, followed by Tracy B. Please go ahead, Rebecca.
Hi, fellows. It's Rebecca T from Central California, grateful compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for all of your shares. Thank you so much for your honesty. You know, when I first heard the paragraph, all I was thinking was, oh, yeah, you know, my husband was like that. Oh, yeah, my husband did do stuff like that. And then as you guys were talking, I realized, oh, my God, I was totally, you know, yeah, focused on what his issue was and what his inventory needed to be. And, you know, and not looking at myself. And so thank goodness for, you know, you guys, and thank goodness for my higher power. It was saying, no, I had something else to hear. And then I realized that all in the while when I was not in recovery, I think I pretty much spent my life actually proving to others how kept up I was. So even though, so I thought for sure, no, I'm present for everybody in the world. I'm doing everything I need to do. I'm working, you know, 40 plus hours. I'm showing up for the family. I'm doing everything I need to do plus more. So so the image there was like, look, don't look at me, because, you know, I've taken care of everything, so there's no need to look at me. I'm showing up. So I guess that was the self-seeking part of my service. But it was also, as long as I'm playing the part, then I don't really have to look at what's really going on inside in terms of, I mean, aside from the fact that I couldn't cover it up, that I was gaining weight, losing weight, which I'm sure my family noticed. And the only people that really ever said something was my husband after a while. And so, yeah, I mean, people did suffer. I think my emotions were confusing people. You couldn't always know when I was going to have that outburst or feel out of control because things weren't going my way. I could be bossy and definitely arrogant because everything I had an idea of how everything should go, then I was able to control that map, how it would look like. So if it veered off in any way, I became very anxious and upset and controlling. So, yeah, I mean, there's tons of things. You know, I couldn't, I only talked with people if it fit in my schedule, if it didn't make me uncomfortable. If I hadn't seen you in a while, then for sure I wasn't going to meet up with you because I was ashamed. I knew I had changed, you know, how I looked, didn't want to be seen that way. So I hid until I was, quote, up to par again.
time.
That went on for years. But thank you so much for your shares, and I will pass. Bye.
Great. Thank you so much, Rebecca T. Tracy B., you will be next. And then after Tracy, I think we'll have time for one more share. So if you want to do that, get ready. And then I also just want to say, if you're a newcomer on the line today, please stay after the recording stops so we can welcome you. Please go ahead, Tracy B.
Hi, this is Tracy B. in Las Vegas. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to share today and just thank you for all your service and thank you for everyone being here. And I just wanted to say how grateful I am for my recovery and that I'm recovered and I'm free. And it's just an amazing, I just can't describe it. And I know it's because I've worked these steps and I'm living in the solution, helping others. I never thought in a million years that I would really care about helping others. And I truly today, I want to be there and I want to help others because I want to give away what was given to me. And, you know, just this freedom. I never thought I'd have it. You know, I'm also an alcoholic. I've been sober going on 10 years and I knew I was missing something when I started listening to A Vision for You probably about a year ago and just listened and listened. And then I finally, I was willing and ready to go to any means to do this and work the steps, like we say, like my hair was on fire because I was desperate and I wanted what you guys have. And it's a miracle to me that I have it and it's from working these steps. And you know, I never thought my eating hurt anybody either. And, you know, I was crazy. I mean, like someone shared about changing diets every other day and expecting my husband to just know and go with it and just go with whatever I think. And it wasn't really about the food or the alcohol. It's about what's in between my ears. And I can say that, you know, today I don't react as much. I'm a lot more even keel. I'm just so grateful. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy B. All right, we have time for one more share. Who would like to take that slot?
This is Freya H.
Go ahead, Reggie Freya O. H. Thank you, Reggie. I think Freya's going to talk. If she goes under three, I'll pitch you in.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Gina. This is Freya H. Really grateful to be on this meeting in Colorado and really grateful to hear this chapter and hear everybody's experience, strength, and hope. When I hear the times that I've heard this, I've thought immediately of, you know, the other addicts in my life. And so I'm absolutely relating. Yes, yes, yes. This is how addiction affects the other people. And, you know, it's a family disease. It's not, it's not a disease that just hurts the user. But I've struggled, like other people have said, to apply it to myself. And so it's just really helpful to hear it studied. And the thing that I wanted to share is that, one thing that's been just a really simple way to kind of, to explore this question is just to ask the question, what is it like for other people to live with me? You know, what is it like for my husband to have me as a wife? What is it like to have for my children to have me as a mom? And, you know, asking that question of all my different relationships. And I had a conversation with my husband just a couple days ago where he said something like, and he was not being defensive or angry, he just was saying something along the lines of, you know, I want you to be happy with me, and it seems like there's always something missing, you know. And what he was really describing is, you know, the attitude that I can take towards myself is that, you know, that as long as I am being judgmental and critical of myself, which is a big, you know, character defect, old idea of mine, that I'm not going to be able to be truly loving and accepting of others, especially the ones who I love the most. So when I did my four-step inventory and I I wrote the sex ideal. Mine really took the form of a relationship ideal, so looking at all the relationship. And so much of what came out on that relationship ideal was me continuing to be in recovery and to work my program so that I can, you know, have the best possible relationship with my husband. So I'm really grateful that that this program is designed to last for a lifetime, and that I can continue to grow, and that I don't need to discount the growth that I already have, but just knowing that, oh yeah, when something else shows up, it's God saying, hey, guess what? You're ready for this. You're ready to heal this part, and just to trust that before I really wasn't ready. So anyway, just really grateful, and I look forward to continuing to study this chapter and see what God has to show me. So I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Freya H., and thank you, everybody who shared. And Reggie, jump on tomorrow. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Pia S. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, thank you, Gina. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.